Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is an RNZ podcast.
Hello, I'm Simon Morris. And at last, we've been put out of our misery with this year's Academy Awards done and dusted. But in a way, they'd already done their job long before the actual gongs were handed out. These were the first Oscars in living memory where the emphasis was on the actual movies in contention rather than hand-wringing over how irrelevant the event had become.
We made a film about the man who created the atomic bomb, and for better or for worse, we're all living in Oppenheimer's world, so I would really like to dedicate this to the peacemakers everywhere.
After several years of disconnect between what the Academy chose to reward and what the public actually went to see, this year saw a bunch of movies that were both popular and critically acclaimed. The range was also astonishingly broad this year, thus proving, as they say, that it would be a dull old world if we all thought the same.
The show, as you know, is starting an hour early this year, but don't worry, it will still end very, very late. In fact, we're already 5 minutes over, and I am not joking.
In fact, this year's Oscars were a return to what worked in the past after several failed experiments. Host Jimmy Kimmel followed the successful blueprint of people like Billy Crystal, even dear old Bob Hope. After a parade of previous award shows, though, there weren't too many surprises.
My dress is broken. I think it happened during I'm Just Ken. I'm pretty sure. Oh boy, this is really overwhelming. Sorry, okay. My voice is also a little gone.
Personally, I didn't expect Yorgos Lanthimos's typically eccentric Poor Things to pick up as many Oscars as it did, though it scored mainly in the visual show-off areas, design, costumes, makeup, and of course Emma Stone's Take No Prisoners lead performance. I was pleased that Cord Jefferson picked up Best Adapted Screenplay for American Fiction.
I understand that this is a risk-averse industry. I get it. But $200 million movies are also a risk, you know? And it doesn't always work out, but you take the risk anyway. And instead of making one $200 million movie, try making 20 $10 million movies. Or 50...
The one question was whether the top award would go to yet another film set around the Second World War, joining a dozen previous Best Film Oscars set between 1939 and 1945. Well, this year certainly looked promising with two strong contenders, The Zone of Interest and the subsequent major winner, Oppenheimer.
And the Oscar goes to Christopher Nolan Oppenheimer.
This is the first Oscar win and eighth nomination for Christopher Nolan.
But The Zone of Interest did well too, an Oscar for Best International Film and a well-deserved Oscar for Best Sound. Overall, the awards this year were fun. They took the movies seriously, but not themselves. The gags mostly worked, and nobody got slapped. That's a win, surely.
Thanks for Ken-splaining that to me. All right, mister, I need to paint my abs on to get nominated. You don't see Robert Downey doing that.
You're kidding.
Robert Downey did not paint his abs on to
this
get
This is
nominated.
Insane, Emily. This has got to stop. We have to squash this.
This week sees yet another war-adjacent movie, a heartstring-tugging tale of a D-Day veteran off to commemorate the 70th anniversary. Though for many, the tears of the great escaper may come from seeing Sir Michael Caine and Dame Glenda Jackson complete stellar careers that started in the swinging 60s.
Are you coming to bed?
Yours or mine?
Oh.
Starting her own career as this year's BAFTA rising star, Mia McKenna-Bruce, in 2024's take on 60s films like Alfie and The Knack, How to Have Sex.
Oh my God!
Oh, she's ready to go out!
And the third of a very unlikely trifecta is aimed at an audience that wouldn't be seen dead at something called How to Have Sex. Cabrini is about that rare thing, an American saint. Though, if you've never heard of Mother Cabrini, you're probably not alone.
I want to build an orphanage and give the abandoned children the love they so badly need.
If you're asking my permission, no. Your mission is over, Mother.
My mission has barely begun.
But first, a film that cashes in on familiarity with both theme and stars, The Great Escaper.
Right. Soon as we've had some grub, I'll take you for a spin along the front.
And when we get back, I think they've got a male stripper for you.
What?
I made that last bit up.
It's soon obvious that The Great Escaper, starring Sir Michael Caine and the late Dame Glenda Jackson in their farewell performances, is aimed at a specifically senior audience. Aside from the actors themselves, both in their late 80s when they made it, the story has all the hallmarks of a film aimed at the so-called silver dollar.
Do you remember the donkey? His name was Pedro, and he took a real shine to you.
His name was Manuel, the donkey. Pedro was the owner, and he it was who took a shine to me.
Based on a true story, The Great Escaper is set in 2014, the 70th anniversary of the D-Day landings. The surviving Allied servicemen are invited to a commemoration on Normandy Beach to be headed by Queen Elizabeth II and US President Barack Obama. And Bernie Jordan is keen to go.
I want to go to France.
What are you on about?
The trip to the beaches. D-Day. Really sorry, Bernie. You left it too late.
Bernie is at a retirement home with his ailing wife, Renee, where he gets the bad news. He can't go. He and Renee have been married for 70 years too, and she seems to be in even worse shape than the tottery Bernie. But don't be fooled.
Where's Bernie's? Will Martin bring his up later?
Oh, your face, lovely. Your face. I'm pulling your leg. Bernie? Oh, he's gone AWOL.
In fact, once you get past how old Sir Michael and Dame Glenda are looking, you suddenly realise how sharp they still are. After decades of being politically poles apart, the right-wing working class Caine and the former hard-left Labour MP Jackson now seem to be a marriage made in heaven.
I couldn't leave you all on your own.
Unless you have to.
Where is he? He's disappeared off the face of the earth.
With Renee's blessing, Bernie sneaks out on his walker, catches a bus to Dover, and then a ferry to Normandy. Belatedly, the staff at the retirement home realise Bernie's done a runner, and before you know it, the media have jumped on the story.
At 90?
Well, he has done it before. Only then, of course, they were shooting at him.
So determined to honour his fallen comrade, the D-Day veteran made a break for the coast and mounted what has now been dubbed the Great Escape.
All of which actually happened, I gather. I imagine no sooner had Bernie Jordan, the Great Escaper, been splashed all over the Daily Mail and Breakfast TV when director Oliver Parker and writer William Ivory were signed up to do the movie.
Who are these people?
They're Germans.
Oh, this was your beach.
Yeah.
Parker and Ivory both specialise in undemanding, feel-good English fare. Between them, they've produced stuff like Dad's Army, Made in Dagenham, Torval and Dean, and Johnny English. They know what they're doing, and we know what they're likely to do with this.
Me too.
However, for those few potential audience members who don't know what to expect in a film called The Great Escaper, the trailer goes to quite extraordinary lengths to make sure you're not caught by surprise, which is a shame.
I'm sorry, Renee. I've been in the papers. I've been on TV. 90-year-old coffin dodger. Honours the glorious dead.
The good news is that they leave some highlights out, not least a posh old vet played by an old mate of Michael Caine's, upper-class thespian Sir John Standing. Standing plays Arthur, an ex-RAF pilot wrestling with some demons. And it turns out Bernie has his own issues. It's significant that this is both men's first trip back to France since 1945.
Hey, Ming! We can't land in this, can we?
What the bloody hell are you asking me for, huh?
Well, because you've been here before! Hey, you! You know, with the first lot!
The brief flashbacks to the young Bernie, Michael Caine look-alike Will Fletcher, are rather nicely done. In particular, one scene where he has to encourage a young soldier. After all, Bernie's already made the trip to the Normandy beach killing fields more than once.
Piece of piece. We went off like clockwork.
Yeah.
Well, they do plan these things, you know.
Meanwhile, back on the home front, we alternate between Renee and her younger version, a plucky lass at a munitions factory with no idea if her fiancé will make it home. And of course, 70 years later, Renee's still wondering if she'll see Bernie again.
What a waste.
Hey? What a waste.
These scenes are surprisingly moving, almost entirely thanks to the wily veteran actors making the most of what they're given. Of course, both Sir Michael and Dame Glenda have won 2 Oscars each, coincidentally, and this is why. They'll be sorely missed.
If you want to honour your friend, Bernie, you've spent 70 years loving me.
I'd go anywhere with you.
We have never wasted 1 second of our time together.
It's unlikely there'll be much crossover between the audiences of The Great Escaper and that of a little indie comedy drama called How to Have Sex, though in fact they each might enjoy the experience rather more than they were expecting. How to Have Sex is a tale that's, if not quite as old as time, certainly a familiar one to anyone who's ever been a teenager. Three 16-year-old English girls, Tara, Skye and Em, are off on their first solo holiday away from their families, which means a Mediterranean resort, in this case on Crete, loud music, more booze than is good for them, and if they're lucky, plenty of holiday hookups. There may be pursed lips among some people outside that demographic, but I think most of us have memories of when we were young, dumb, and off the leash for the first time. On day one, the girls are already chorusing, "Best holiday ever."
You two are two of my best mates.
Gang, gang, gang.
No one cares if you're a virgin, it's very chill, so why are you bringing it up then?
Skye seems the most worldly, Em is the most book smart, while Tara is the most engaging, fun, boisterous, up for anything, a bit naive. Because Tara's not particularly well-hidden secret is she's still a virgin and plans to rectify matters on this holiday.
What's your name?
Tara.
I've not noticed it before, but you're proper beautiful.
And in many ways, that's almost all the story. How to Have Sex was written and directed by a young cinematographer called Molly Manning Walker. She shot a little charmer called Scrapper last year. And the subject is one she's clearly pretty familiar with.
Hey, we're going to play a game.
Walker doesn't fall into the trap of making her young leads better or smarter than they need to be. The three girls meet a trio staying next door. 2 guys, Badger and Paddy, and their platonic female buddy, Paige. A nice touch. But we have no more idea what to expect from them than Tara, Skye and Em do.
All right, do us a favour and wake Tara up.
And shoot yours.
There's every indication that it could all go terribly wrong, particularly in a resort full of extremely drunk British teenagers. When Tara, adventurous but younger and smaller than her friends, gets separated at a sleazy nightclub, we can only suspect the worst.
My mum's life, I'm not joking.
I just look proper, yeah?
If ever there was a movie designed to bring out the worried parent in an older audience, it's How to Have Sex. Honestly, Tara, have you no idea what can happen at places like this? Have you read that guy's tattoos? Did you ask what they put in that drink? Well, the obvious response is, calm down, Grandpa, we're teenagers, we'll be fine. Which at most of these places is true. Mostly. But as the title suggests, if you want to learn how to have sex, I'm afraid you're going to have to meet someone. And with all those flashing lights, deafening beats and drunken strangers, telling Mr. Right from Mr. Very Wrong is pretty much the luck of the draw.
Where have you been?
The two reasons why How to Have Sex is rather better than you might think are star Mia McKenna-Bruce, whose expressive face is her fortune, and writer-director Molly Manning-Walker. Everyone has three names these days. Molly's script seems so true it feels like a young girl's journal. For all I know, it is. It's all in the detail, and her direction is spot on too. Her camera background means she knows where to look, of course, but the performances she brings out of her young actors are something special too. When I found myself at a movie called Cabrini, I honestly had no idea what to expect. But that's because I'm not American-Italian, a New Yorker, or Catholic. Mother Cabrini is more famous in those circles, we're told, because she was the first and possibly only US citizen to be made a saint.
I was told that you were rejected by three different orders, each time for weakness of constitution.
The film Cabrini was directed by Alejandro Gomez Monteverdi, who made the popular but controversial Sound of Freedom last year. Like many faith-based films, Cabrini is more interested in a moral lesson than sticking religiously to the facts.
Doctors tell me 5 years.
Five would be a miracle.
In that case, I should get to work.
It opens in Italy around 1890, where Mother Cabrini, despite her failing health, is determined to set up a mission in farthest China. The Pope advises against, but reluctantly agrees she can take over an orphanage in the slums of New York instead.
If I made you the first woman ever to lead an overseas mission, the whole world would look to you as proof of what woman can or cannot accomplish.
Leading a party of six nuns, most of whom can't speak English, Mother Cabrini arrives in the Italian Quarter, a suburb called Five Points, and is shocked by how squalid it all is. Many of the poor, particularly the orphaned children, are forced to live in sewers below the streets.
My sisters, if we are to build an empire of hope, it seems we must first conquer New York.
Filthy dagos. They just keep coming.
She goes straight to the Archbishop, played by David Morse, which is never a good sign. Even in civvies, Morse specialises in untrustworthy people with a little bit of power. Here he advises Mother Cabrini that, essentially, the poor will always be with us and there's nothing to be done.
You have swatted the hornet's nest.
Get out, Dagon! Go!
I hold the best hospital for your people and for mine.
Well, clearly the Archbishop doesn't know Cabrini. Refusing to take no for an answer, she takes over the orphanage, cleans it, furnishes it, and fills it up with squeaky clean street urchins, all paid for, as far as I can tell, by the power of positive thinking.
I need an orphanage with more room, where my children can be children.
I'd like you to keep your crime and your filth out of this neighborhood.
The main thing she's up against, it seems, is anti-Italian prejudice. According to Cabrini, this is worse than any prejudice seen in New York before or since, which may come as a surprise to the Dutch, Irish, Polish, Jewish, Black, Puerto Rican or Asian communities. Later, the film reluctantly concedes that the Big Apple has been pretty even-handed dishing out bigotry over the decades.
Who the hell do you think you are?
I am a woman, and I am Italian. And we are all human beings. We are all the same.
If writer-director Alejandro Monteverdi has a fault, it's falling in love with a catchphrase and then beating us over the head with it interminably. In Sound of Freedom, it was the portentous but slightly meaningless slogan, God's children are not for sale.
In America, the greatest nation on earth, rats have it better than the children of Five Points.
It's not safe. Not for you. Be careful. This place will eat you alive.
Cabrini's phrase is the slightly less catchy, rats have it better than the children of Five Points. Mother Cabrini first bullies the editor of the New York Times to use it as a headline and then repeats it regularly to get what she wants.
Dear reader, New York is built upon the dead.
What she wants, and as far as I can tell, what she gets, is somewhere to put these starving orphans of not just Five Points, not just all of New York, but pretty much the whole Catholic world. And she does it. Again, the details of her massive achievements are a little vague, by bullying the powers that be, starting with the mayor of New York, played by John Lithgow.
The mayor will find a way to get you out.
You have an election coming up, do you not?
I believe I'm being threatened by a nun.
Mother Cabrini herself is played by solemn, big-eyed and beautiful Christiana Dellana. I initially assumed that was filmmaker's license, but to my surprise, she turns out to be pretty much a ringer for the real-life Cabrini.
This project is overly ambitious, perhaps unrealistic.
We are bold, or we die.
This is how I learned to live in America.
It's terribly long and earnest. Mother Cabrini is too good to be true, just as the powers she faces seem to be too bad. But her later achievements, the reason for her sainthood, are quite jaw-dropping in a purely business sense. The other catchphrase she uses repeatedly is a capitalist slogan, essentially, go big or go home. A very American saint, in other words. And at the end of a show where virtue is mostly rewarded for a change, it's time to go. I'm Simon Morris, and I hope you'll join me at the movies same time next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.